The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. We did something different leading up to the Christmas holiday this year, and I'm kind of curious as to how some of you felt about it. We played three solid days, pretty much solid, of classical Christmas music, leading up to and including Christmas Day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of last week. It was no small task here to get that all set up, get that arranged, but that's what we did this year. It was new for us here on KFUO Radio, and I'm curious as to how you felt about it, if you thought that it was a good idea, if you enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure you didn't hear Bing Crosby in there anywhere. I'm pretty sure you didn't hear Dean Martin in there anywhere. I know Bing and Dean were available at other radio stations, but just wondering how you felt about that. By the way, our numbers here for Ask the Pastor are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to call us and share a thought on just about any subject here on our Bible study program, President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation, Tom Reese, is with us on the telephone. Morning, Tom.
Morning, Chuck.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
Had a fabulous Christmas.
Fabulous Christmas. Now, you're one of those guys who commutes, right? Did you do Christmas?
Yeah, we are in Minnesota. We have a home in Minnesota, and we're up here. I'm looking at about 48 inches of snow on the ground.
How many?
48, roughly.
Wow.
In the big drifts.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. We had 35 inches of snow in December alone, and that was on top of a bunch that we had in November.
Who shovels that snow, Tom?
I got a fantastic neighbor.
Yeah?
The man is one of my favorite people.
Yeah?
In the whole world. So
has he got like a nuclear snowblower or something?
I buy the snowblowers and give him a key to the garage, and he says, okay, fine, and he takes care of it from there. So.
Yeah, well, that's excellent.
The man is great.
So are you otherwise kind of, were you snowed in over the Christmas holiday just to put a fire?
No, I did miss one flight missed two flights over the course of my travels in December because of weather. And got up here about a week ago and decided just to stay put. So I'll be here until January 2nd.
All right. Well, let's remind folks who may not have heard you here on our Ask the Pastor program what it is that you, as the president of the LCMS Foundation, what it is that you do.
Well, the foundation is a 53-year-old organization that was established by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod back in 1958. And its purpose is to help individuals with their gift planning processes. So if an individual has a mind to support ministry with gifts and needs some help with that, the foundation provides that help. Now, of course, as we've mentioned before on your program, if I'm going to write a check to a charity or to a ministry or to my congregation, that oftentimes doesn't take a whole lot of planning. But when you get into the area of making gifts from assets other than cash, or making gifts from through an estate planning process, that is where the foundation really gets involved, and has been doing a fantastic job for people these many years to help them with that process.
So when the Congress of the United States was taking a hard look at whether or not to extend the Bush tax cuts and all the implications associated with that, is that something that you were watching carefully, or is that kind of out on the periphery for you? How do you see it?
No, we watched that very carefully, particularly because the extension of the Bush tax cuts included some extension of some estate tax planning rates that were extended for the next 2 years. And the whole last year, people were very confused. In fact, the joke in the business, in our industry, and in many churches was, if you're going to die, 2010 would be a great year because the tax benefits will be terrific. And you just don't know what those are going to be in 2011 and afterward. Now we've extended that, the Congress has extended that for two more years so that the levels at which estate tax kicks in are at the high level that they were during the Bush administration.
Now, I'd like to talk about this, but I don't want to talk about it in a political context. I don't want to talk about the Republicans and the Democrats and that kind of stuff.
Oh, you bet. Right.
So I may ask a question that is naively political. I don't mean to do that.
Mm-hmm.
As a financial planner, as an organization that takes a look at what the benefits of legislation, government action, were you in favor of maintaining the status quo, extending the tax cuts, or were you against that, or did you just didn't really care, just make up your mind and do it? How did you see it?
That's a terrific question, and that question is an apolitical question. It's certainly a something on which each one of us and each of your listeners would have their own personal opinion, to be sure. You know, from a purely financial standpoint, a person like me who thinks financially a lot would say that the less taxes we can pay, the better off we are. And that is a financial reality. So if there's going to be a chance to pay fewer taxes as opposed to more, I'll raise my hand on the fewer. Certainly, however, I'm also in the camp personally that paying taxes as a citizen of the United States of America is a privilege. It's
Did you say privilege?
Well, sure, absolutely. It's a privilege to be a citizen of this country.
Yes, I'm with you so far.
Yeah, there you go. We understand that the country, the running of the government and the activities that we are involved in as a nation require funding. And certainly that applies to the national defense. It applies to those things which are spelled out specifically in the Constitution. I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't give you all the amendments to the Constitution, but those things that are designated as the responsibility of national government and those things that are designated to the responsibility of your respective state government in its Constitution need to be funded. And that's part of the price that we pay for living in a democracy, and really all of us ought to expect to do our part. The challenge for individuals like us as taxpayers becomes, do we agree with the way the money's being spent, and do we agree that the levels at which we are being taxed currently or in the future are appropriate? And everybody has to form their own opinion on that one, that's for sure.
Well, what you described there was a kind of a schizophrenic reality, which probably would drive me nuts if I had your job. On the one hand, you believe that the less taxes we pay, the better it is for us. On the other hand, you describe the paying of taxes as a privilege. So you've got one foot squarely in each camp there. How do you maintain equilibrium, Pastor Reese?
Well, then I'm speaking not as a pastor, but as a citizen, so let's make that clear. But as a citizen, I certainly come down on the side of, I'm looking for fiscal responsibility in government and in our leaders, but responsibility that is compassionate and takes into account the needs not only of our own citizens, but the needs of the global community and the world in which we live. So there's a willingness, I think, on the part of most people to make an investment in those kinds of things that we need to do as a nation and as states. But there is, always frustration over how the spending is being done, how those decisions are arrived at, and are we at an appropriate level of spending. And where the joy of taxpaying meets the realities of, hey, wait a minute, it's not a blank check that we have as taxpayers. What kind of fiscal responsibilities are our leaders exercising as they make these decisions? So that's kind of the complete picture, and certainly is worth discussing.
Well, now you are a clergyman. You're an ordained man.
I am.
If you chose to, you could receive a call and become the pastor of a parish somewhere up there in Minnesota and be buried under snow for the rest of your life.
There you go.
But at the present time, you're serving as president of the LCMS Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's not really a pastoral position in any way, is it?
It's a great question, and there have been previous presidents of the foundation that have been ordained clergy, and there have been previous presidents who have been laypersons, so it is not a requirement of this job. What I happen to bring to the job at this particular time in the foundation's history is an enormous personal passion for stewardship and a good understanding, a very good understanding of, you know, stewardship as it is presented in the scriptures.
So if I entrust my money to you, President Reese, and the LCMS Foundation, you know, I really don't need you to pray over it. I just need you to manage it so that it will earn a nice income. Is that a wrong attitude on my part?
Well, I would hope that you'd encourage us to pray as we go about our daily duties, because that's sure what we would encourage anybody in any calling, whether it was a layperson who was leading the foundation or a pastor. But if we were doing that without the expertise that the foundation has for gift planning and for financial management, and that expertise begins with our board of trustees, and goes all the way down to people who serve day-to-day in every level of the foundation, you wouldn't want to be involved in it. So we do have both. We have that attitude that it is Christ's money. It is God's, we are God's stewards, but on the other hand, we're doing it with all the best expertise that we can bring to the job. So you would want both from your foundation.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I want to return to the tax cut thing here in just a little bit, but let's take a phone call and talk with Phil. Hi, Phil, you're on the Bible study.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good. You just mentioned, you know, how what we thought about the music that you played for Christmas, and you know, I don't know why, but as years goes by, I get a little annoyed with hearing so much of you know, the traditional Christian, or not Christian, but Christmas music, that, you know, Bing Crosby and all those things. You know, the time Christmas comes around, I'm burned out on it, and so it was a, you know, a nice change to hear something other than those things. But you know, when I hear tunes without words and I don't know the tunes, you know, it's okay, but I'm not inspired. And I do listen to KFUO for inspiration. I mean, I really need it every day, all the time.
Right.
And you know, when you changed your format to music, I wasn't happy about it, but then the more I listened to it, and God's word was rich in the music that you was playing, it did inspire me a lot.
Well,
God
good.
Changed my mind.
Well, good.
You know, I said years ago, I like all kinds of music except for opera. But then when this little girl, Jackie Evancho, started singing, I mean, that amazed me. And, so God can change my mind on things.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the response.
Okay.
While we were making contact with you, President Reese, I just kind of tossed out the question as to how people felt about the classical Christmas music we played leading up to Christmas and including Christmas, and that's why Phil called.
Oh, okay.
All right, now, on the tax cut question, in the days and week or so before the Christmas holiday arrived, there was some debate going on in the media about the morality or the ethics of the tax cuts. There seemed to be quite a push on the part of some that, well, yeah, okay, we'll extend the tax cuts for middle-class Americans, but rich people are obligated morally and ethically to pay more. And so we should not retain the tax cuts for the wealthy. As a matter of fact, there were a few people who came with the opinion that if Jesus could weigh in on this question, he'd be weighing in on the side of no tax cuts for the wealthy. I don't know if you heard any of that debate. How do you respond to that kind of that moment when people sort of play the Jesus card into tax questions?
Yeah, that's a great. Isn't that something that really is interesting? How that can get into the conversation. And Jesus had a few things to say about taxes.
Yes, he did.
You know, the render unto Caesar is a quote from Jesus. Jesus stayed fairly neutral upon the whole thing. He encouraged the disciples to pay taxes to the Roman government, even though the Roman government was an abusive and an affront to them as members of God's chosen people. But Jesus said that's part of the whole arena of being a citizen. And Paul echoed that as well in Romans chapter 13 and other places. You know, the tax cuts for the wealthy, the economic question that is still not resolved but has advocates on both sides is that tax reductions or no tax increases is the best way to stimulate the economy. And President Reagan brought that to the forefront of his administration, and we've been bouncing back and forth on that one ever since. Economically, I'm not an economist, and so I'm not an expert in that area, but I can certainly understand that argument that the more money that is left in the pockets of American citizens and the more money that's left to governments, corporations, the more they have to invest in the future and to build the economy, which in turn will create, hopefully, more taxpayers. So the idea that increases in taxes on anyone hampers that is a good argument from an economic standpoint. The other side of it is that there are certainly people of enormous means, and they make up anywhere from 2 to 5% of the taxpaying population, that evidently do not pay a marginal tax rate that is in line with the enormous wealth production that they personally have and that they bring to the table through their business activities. And there I would go to such a respected source as Warren Buffett, who's been saying this for years. My marginal tax rate, he says, is lower than my secretary's. So on a fair basis, she pays more taxes than I do. And you know, there's a case to be made for that. So then the question becomes, who are the wealthy? And this $250,000 earning level has been thrown out there over and over again in the last two or three political campaigns. Is it fair to say that people who make over $250,000 are the wealthy? And if so, should there be different tax rates for those folks? And that's where the disagreement really gets centered, is in that taxpayer bracket.
Well, that's, you know, that Buffett quote, we've heard that many times.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the interesting thing about that is I'm pretty sure that Warren Buffett is not doing anything illegal. What he is doing is taking advantage of tax law as has been created by the government, which may not tax him as much as his secretary, but has created places where he's encouraged to invest his money, which the government thinks will be productive.
Exactly.
So it's not as if, from my perspective, and I certainly don't have as much money as Warren Buffett, nor do I think that you do, but the government has created incentives for people to use their money in such a way, investing it, which we know grows businesses and creates jobs and has a good outcome.
That's right.
I don't think we can just blindly come to the conclusion that if Warren Buffett is paying less taxes than his secretary, that that's bad. Apparently the government doesn't, or at least in the past, hasn't thought it was bad, because I'm pretty sure he's not breaking any laws.
Right.
Are you following my logic here?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So he is publicly advocating a change in, either a change in the tax laws or a change in the tax rates, one way or the other. Is what he is saying. And you and I both do that. I mean, it was probably part of the decision, Chuck, for you. It was for me that when we were younger, my wife and I said, well, should we buy a house or should we continue to rent? And we realized that if we bought a house, not only would come the advantages of home ownership, but also would come some tax advantages, because interest, mortgage interest, on a mortgage-backed loan is tax deductible under the current tax code.
In some of the legislation that has passed in the last year, and this turned out to be quite a controversial thing, the legislation was in some cases jam-packed with what they call earmarks. And the legislators don't even know what the earmarks all are. Once they were uncovered, rather slowly, we found out that there was money being set aside for some, I think the appropriate term would be, ridiculous projects. Just sort of spendy projects. And it causes me to ask myself, do I trust Warren Buffett investing the money in an intelligent and productive way? Or do I trust the federal government investing that money in projects that most of the rest of us think are kind of silly?
Right.
If that question can be that simple, then I think I'm going with Warren Buffett's perspectives. What do you think?
If you can have confidence in the government and the spending?
Yeah. The investing, to use that term. We're going to invest it. In the government likes to say jobs, but if you're building a bridge to nowhere, for example, then I don't know if that's the wisest thing to do.
Well, that's just it. That's just it. And I don't know enough people personally in government. I wish I did. I probably should. The ones that I do know are very responsible, and they're not complete idiots. So, you know, you'd like to think that all of our leadership has the best interests at heart, but obviously that is not the case, you know, as you look at things over the years historically. But gosh, the projects that and earmarks, we should explain, are things that get tagged on to bills that may have nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with the original legislation. But in order to get a consensus or to build the number of votes that are needed, then, you know, legislators and representatives put these special projects onto bills, and they'll say, you know, if I support your legislation, will you agree to have this tagged onto your bill? And that's how those things get mushroomed.
Let's take a phone call here before we get to the bottom of the hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Joe. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. This question is going to be kind of hard to put together in my own mind, so maybe you guys can try to figure out how to answer this the best way. But the idea that God, through the government, I guess I'm wondering, like, if his emphasis is more towards justice, and through the church it's more about the benevolence. And I'm not saying that it's exclusive to one or the other, but when Jesus talked about, you know, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and God what is God's, like, the motivation to be benevolent is more towards the church side of the equation, that institution, and the justice more towards the government side. And just tying that in with Ananias and Sapphira, where Peter said, when it was yours, you know, you could do whatever you want with it. Like, don't bring it here like God's obligating you to give what he's given to you, but it's your choice. And I'm to tie that all together with the government trying to discern, you know, who should be more benevolent, like a rich guy, you know, well, God's given you more, and so you need to give more back. If that institution of government should really be going there, where I think justice should be much more blind, like on our, you know, our symbols, where the scales of justice, they don't see who's got less, or it's just equal across the board. Maybe it makes sense, maybe it doesn't, but I'm trying to sort all that out.
Got the question, Tom?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a great question and a great observation. Certainly when we're talking about this whole subject, we are talking about the doctrine of the two kingdoms. And the kingdom of, that Augustine talked about, the kingdom of the left, and Luther did as well, and the kingdom of the right. The kingdom of the right being the church, the kingdom of grace, where forgiveness of sins, righteousness and salvation are proclaimed through Jesus Christ, is not the business of the government. It is the business of the church. It is the charge to the church.
So are you talking about separation of church and state? Is that what you're talking about?
No, not particularly.
Okay,
I'm talking about
all right.
Two kingdoms.
Okay, two kingdoms, Separation of church and state. Good question, yeah. Joe. We're gonna talk about it the other side of the break, Tom. Stay right there.
Okay, Chuck.
Advent and Christmas are wonderful times at Concordia Seminary. We have decorated the campus with lights and reminders of the reason for the season. Our chapel services help prepare us for Christ's coming at Bethlehem, the last day, and especially now, into our hearts. We invite you to take a drive or walk through the campus and join us for chapel weekdays at 11 o'clock.
KFUO Radio has many opportunities for day sponsors. It's a great way to support the radio ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You can become a day sponsor and within the announcements mark an anniversary, birthday, remembrance of a loved one, or other event worldwide and on the airwaves of KFUO Radio. To become a day sponsor, call Chuck Rathard at 1-888-4-KFUO-AM to discuss a date and get the necessary information, or click on support at kfuo.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you're looking for an innovative way to educate your children about pregnancy, childbirth, and nursing, this product may be for you. It's a handmade cloth doll, complete with a baby doll inside the mother's tummy. An elastic opening demonstrates how a baby is born. A woven umbilical cord and placenta are included. A snap is sewed on the baby's mouth with a corresponding side on the mother in the proper locations for nursing. The dolls, which can also be custom ordered, convey birth and motherhood in a very simple and positive way. If this is your cup of tea and you'd like more information, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. You'll find more details and order information. In our society today, I'm pleased to see this positive spin on motherhood.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
The Obamas go to church. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. President Barack Obama and his family have attended a Sunday worship service near their vacation retreat in Hawaii. The Obamas were greeted by clapping parishioners and a band playing Joy to the World as they were led to their seats in the front row of a Marine Corps chapel. Correspondent Julie Pace has more from Honolulu.
This is the first time the president has attended church services since September. The White House says he hasn't joined a church in Washington because his attendance would be too disruptive to parishioners. He sometimes worships at a private chapel at Camp David.
At the Vatican, about 250 poor people have dined on lasagna, veal, and cake. Pope Benedict invited them to Sunday's post-Christmas lunch. Before the meal, Benedict delivered his Sunday blessing from his studio window. He denounced Christmas attacks on the faithful in the Philippines and Nigeria and a suicide bombing in Pakistan that killed 45 people at an aid center. I'm Steve Coleman.
I'm Diane Summers, host of The Essence each weekday between 1 and 3 here on KFUO Radio. Sacred and classical music has reflected the beauty of the Creator throughout the ages. The great heritage of the Church features this music throughout the centuries of Christian history. Join me weekdays as we explore and experience the great inspiration provided by countless composers. Music for your daily walk. The Essence, weekdays at 1 p.m. here on KFUO Radio.
Where do you worship?
I am Staunton. I worship at a Korean church, Great Korean Church.
Concordia Lutheran Church, Kirkwood.
West County Assembly of God.
Salem Lutheran, Bethany Afton. I found the church through your radio station.
We worship at Emmanuel Evangelical Free Church.
Zion Lutheran in Bethalto.
Providence Reformed Presbyterian Church.
We worship at Faith Lutheran Church.
Grace Presbyterian Church in St. Charles.
Truth knows no boundaries. KFUO Radio.
Prior to our bottom of the hour break, Joe asked a fascinating question. I'm going to try to restate that question. If I don't get it done properly, President Tom Reese, LCMS Foundation, perhaps you can reshape my analysis. But I think basically Joe was saying he's taking a look at the way we administer our affairs as a people, as the American people. And there is a place for an administration in the church. There is a place for administration in the government. In the church, there is room for forgiveness and redemption. In the government realm, justice is blind, and that administration ought to be pretty much uniform across classes, across races, across different demographics. We shouldn't be making distinctions there. But when we make tax distinctions, when we tax some people more than others, perhaps that is a problem that creates distinctions, creates, can I use the term, discrimination. That's kind of the sum and substance of his question, as I understand it. President Reese began discussing the two kingdoms, and let's pick it up there. President?
Yeah, that's right. That's immediately where my thoughts went, was to the doctrine of the two kingdoms, where, of course, I think we can agree, and most listeners would agree, that the kingdom of grace is the domain of the church appointed by Christ to dispense the good news of the forgiveness of sins through the means of grace. And, you know, that's a fairly understandable thing. It's got its own set of questions, but that's not what we're talking about today. The kingdom on the left, which is the kingdom of power, and I'm talking about now power in the world as it exists today, is where God also prevails. So he is ruler over the governments in the world, whether they acknowledge that or not. But those governments also have a responsibility to do whatever they are called upon to do. And in a democracy, it's whatever they are called upon to do by their citizens. So we have a wonderful thing called the Constitution, which of the United States, which was written in 1789 and adopted, and has certain mandates for government to fulfill. The common defense of the nation and provide a system of justice are part of those original mandates. But to provide and create an environment, and this is where it gets a little tricky, to create an environment where every citizen has the potential to achieve whatever level of success or pursuit of happiness, is the actual language that's used, to have that chance to pursue that level of success that they want to in this culture and in this environment, this society, is where it gets a bit challenging. Because we have what are often referred to as entitlements that begin to pile up as decades and centuries of government leaders have shaped and reshaped and added those things which they believe will provide that climate for an equal playing field, a playing field where every individual has the possibility of success, however they might define that. And if you go back far enough, you'll find the seeds of public education, which was not an assumed right for everyone in the beginning. All of the universities that were formed, and the oldest is Harvard University, 1636, were private. Then came Thomas Jefferson with the idea of public higher education, soon to be followed by lots of ideas and philosophies about public education, until we have this massive public education system, which is a good thing, but it's a very expensive thing. And it also has a life of its own. Then comes social programs such as Social Security, begun in the 1930s, to which has been added any number of other social programs, the most recent of which is almost government-managed health care. We're not quite there yet, but we have the largest foray of the government into the health care industry that we've ever had during the current administration. And those things constantly need to be debated, because they do. There's decisions that are made in that whole area of what is the government's role in making things fair and equitable, beyond even what Joe said, the justice idea, but getting into the idea of equal opportunity. And equal opportunity is a very challenging road to go down, because it's never going to be equal. I was born to a very modest income household with very few political and social connections. And that's just the way it is. You can write all the legislation you want, but if my parents had been the Rockefellers, I would have had more economic opportunity than I did when I got started. So it gets very challenging when government continues to legislate this whole area of equitability for opportunity for all, and I think those present some of the challenges. There are a number of economists that have pointed out that you know, it's these entitlement programs that are breaking the back of the federal government today. And what are we going to do about those in the long run? And you can't cut people off in the short run, but what will we do in the long run to manage those obligations that we as a nation have made for ourselves?
Here's another caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Good morning, Jim. You're on the Bible study.
Hey, is this Chuck?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, it didn't sound like it. But anyway, I don't think I'm going to be able to add anything to what this dear brother said. But I don't. Here's what I think about taxing the rich. I don't think that they should be taxed just because they're rich. But here's where I fall out with them: is they spend individual rich people and manufacturing people. And people who have big companies, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year trying to find loopholes to keep and paying taxes. This is where I fall out with them. Number two, I've heard smart people up in Congress and up in the House of Representatives say they don't even understand the tax code. Now, number three, I think that they should send somebody down, or a bunch of somebody's down, to fix the tax code so that the normal person on the street could understand it and make out their own taxes. Of course, I don't pay taxes anymore because I'm on Social Security and I've done got too old. But anyway, now I do not know about a straight tax, but I've heard both sides of it, and it seems like a percentage tax would include everybody paying it, and nobody would get out of it. So I'm going to hang up and listen to what this gentleman has to say.
All right, thanks for the call. President Reese?
Well, he's talking about a flat tax, and the flat tax concept is that it's a percentage that remains the same but is actually applied to everyone, and then you eliminate all or at least the vast majority of deductions. The bottom 20% of earners in this country pay actually zero taxes. And even though he says he's on Social Security, those Social Security earnings are taxable, but he evidently does not earn enough on that to pay any taxes or have a substantial taxable income. And in fact, some folks who are in low income situations, not only do they not pay any taxes, but they receive money back through the tax system in certain tax credits. That's approximately 20%. Then you get about 40% of the taxpayers are paying 80% of the taxes. So there's a large core in there of middle wage to upper wage earners that are really paying the majority of the taxes. The flat tax obviously has an appeal to people because they say it's fair. It's probably not politically sustainable because that bottom 20% who are earning below the poverty level, people say, well, gee, even that would be too crushing of a burden. And you get into this whole argument, the economic argument of a marginal purchasing power, that a gallon of gas for someone who makes $25,000 a year is a bigger investment than a gallon of gas for someone who makes $250,000 a year. So it makes it difficult to believe that it could be politically sustainable. It's frightening for me personally because once Congress would establish a level, let's say that the flat tax is 10%, how high would it go? And if it would go that high and there's no chance to shield any income from taxation through deductions, that makes a financial person very nervous. So you put all those things together, and it seems like it has very little possibility of succeeding, which leaves us with the continual tinkering with the tax code to give advantages to certain people and hope that those will stimulate the economy and continue to be as fair as possible to everyone. And, of course, one of the most obvious of those is home ownership. The government has historically had an interest in home ownership and wants to stimulate that, so we get a tax break if we own our own homes. Another is education. If you pursue a college education for yourself or your children, there is a tax break for that. There's tax credits available for that. So I think that eventually, when the argument is all said and done, that's what we're going to be left with, is a tax structure, a system that does have special interests in it and always will. And those special interests have to be managed according to the political process. Now, Chuck, you mentioned earlier about praying for the foundation, praying over the money or whatever you had said there. To me, that is really where praying and being involved actively to find godly political leaders is so important for us as citizens, to be supportive of those who have not just a godly stance but also the competence to bring to leadership. And when we find those kinds of people, and we've got a few here in Minnesota, we've got a few in Missouri that come to my mind. I won't name names to get down that track, but when you've got some, you say, what a blessing those people are to our national leadership.
I'm wondering if the man, Tom Reese, which of these two categories that you fit into more neatly, either as a man who doesn't spend a lot of time hypothesizing about how things could be better or what moves would be prudent if the government would just do it. No, you're just a guy who says, tell me the rules, and I'll learn the rules, and then I'll manage affairs in the best way I can, or will manage affairs in the best way we can under the rules. Or are you a guy who, having spent some time in this industry and having some expertise, says to himself from time to time, I'll tell you what, if they let Tom Reese run this business for about a month, I could straighten this out, because all they need to do is this, 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 and this. Which of those two is a better fit for you?
Well, if they call me up and say, run it the way you think it should be run, I'll take the job.
Oh, okay. All right.
No problem there. You know, I see an awful lot of, as you do too, I'm sure, a lot of spending in government that it's impossible for me to believe that it can't be done more efficiently. So that's a first thing. And then getting a handle, you know, I think too that I personally think that we are on the far edge of the entitlement spectrum, that we have created so many programs to benefit people, some of which are not even taken advantage of to their full extent, but still exist. And since they don't seem to be doing the job, instead of correcting them, we come up with another one. I think this is true across the board in government, that we need to take a look at the different entitlement programs. We certainly need to take a look at our role internationally when it comes to international defense, because that's an expense that we can't afford not to have. But where do we go, and what do we do as the largest superpower in the world to provide defense for you know, for our allies? So all of those kinds of questions, you know, personally, I think there's a lot of efficiencies that should be attained in government, and that's the frustration that I would have, and I think that would be shared by many taxpayers.
One of the things that I find frustrating, and I think perhaps is frustrating for many of our listeners, is that you don't know what numbers you can trust as you listen to media or news reports. For example, the government tells us that unemployment is 9.8%. But then I hear reports that, well, it's actually more like 17 or 18%, because they're not including people who have given up looking for work, things like that. So I don't know if unemployment is 9.8% or 17% or 22%, and therefore I tend not to pay any attention to the number at all. There are those who say that our government has added $1 trillion in debt over the past year, and then along comes somebody that will say something like, oh, you think our deficit, national debt, is $13 trillion? No, it's way more than that, because of the unfunded liabilities that extend out over the years ahead. And then, again, I don't know what number to believe. Are you in a position, when you hear media reports, because of your expertise in the field that you're in, to know what the real numbers are when these kinds of things happen? Do you know what the real numbers are? Can you kind of sort through that, or are you as lost as I am?
You know, unfortunately, I put myself in the camp as lost as you are in that regard. You have to take as much information as you can find and do the best job you can of evaluating it. One of the things that is interesting is that since 1941, which would be the start of World War II, the federal government has always run a deficit. And the deficit during World War II was the largest deficit the federal government has ever had, and it's huge, even by today's standards. I just saw a graphic of this about 6 months ago in USA Today, and the red line is between revenue and spending is ginormous, to borrow a phrase, for that period, even compared to where we are now. But this is the second highest. And we are fighting two wars, just as we were fighting on two fronts during World War II. Not quite the same scale, but certainly as challenging. Looks like we're going to have long-term commitments for international defense for many years to come. So it's something right now that is, I think, manageable, but needs the best attention that people can give to it, that leaders can give to it. And so I'm encouraged by the fact that it is, we're in a challenging situation. It's not unmanageable, in my opinion, but it's not something that we can continue to try and, quote, spend our way out of, unquote. And this is where I hope that there's some clear-eyed leadership that will, in the next decade, bring us back to more a sense of a sense of stability when it comes to spending versus revenues in the public sector.
Here's where I guess the rubber meets the road for a guy like Tom Reese, because if you're struggling with the news reports as I am, trying to figure out where True North is, we can all sort of hypothesize as to where these things are going, but you are the manager of assets for people who hope those assets will be there maybe 10, 20 years from now.
Right.
So when you hear that California is bankrupt and the governor has declared a state of emergency, when you hear that the state of New York is essentially bankrupt, I think the state of Illinois is not too far behind, and that these institutions are in fact financially failing. How does that affect you at all as you go about the business of managing the funds entrusted to you? Or are those independent realities? And particularly in the context, Tom, of thinking 5-10 years down the road as opposed to just next week.
Right, right. Well, those mega, the macroeconomic issues that you're describing there, the state of economies of states and federal governments are something that does not affect the work that we do. But certainly the changes in tax law and the more microeconomic issues like interest rates and, investment prognosis and those kinds of things does affect what we do. And so when I'm talking to people about including charitable decisions in their estate planning, there is not just a charitable interest, which is first and foremost. People, when we talk to them, we want to say, do you have a love for the Lord and a love for the ministries of the church? If you do, we're the right ones to talk to. But after that, there is a very powerful economic incentive, personal economic incentive, to doing this kind of charitable estate planning, which can result and is to a large degree dictates what we do as an organization. Right now, for example, a gift annuity is an instrument that an individual makes a gift to a ministry, and I'm going to use $10,000 as an example. If I am 56 years old, which I happen to be, and I make a $10,000 contribution to a charitable gift annuity, I receive a payout from that gift personally myself till the day I die. And the interest rate on that payout right now is 5.3%. That's a better payout than I'm going to get over with any similar kind of fixed income, quote, investment, unquote, at this particular point in time, and maybe a fairly solid payout for some time to come as we look at how interest rates work. So now we're looking at both consideration of economic issues as well as charitable issues as we help an individual determine the best way to fulfill their charitable desires as well as their desires for the need for income. This kind of planning, of course, can apply to a person's family as well in the future. And paying attention to the state of affairs with this kind of planning is where we are very helpful. I would also say that, that's where we fall down on that, how we started this conversation this morning, Chuck. That's where we fall in the line of it's always better to pay less taxes than more if you're doing your own personal tax planning. And we help people try to do that as well.
We have a few minutes remaining here. I've heard that the federal government has taken to running its printing presses pretty much 24/7. Are you concerned about inflation here in the near term? Is there something that investors or people who are facing a fixed income down the road ought to be doing as it pertains to inflation?
Well, yes, a good question. I think that a well-planned investment program, just as a well-planned charitable estate planning program, would take into account the possibility of either one. And so, for example, if people are doing fixed income investing now, most of us who do that kind of investing think of laddering our investments to have maturities of investment vehicles that are spread out over at least 5 years, if not even longer. That way, if interest rates do start to creep up, you have some of those fixed income investments that mature a year from now, and you could reinvest that portion of your asset base into, maybe higher interest-bearing accounts. So if somebody would like more information about this, they can certainly call me or their own personal financial planner, obviously, for the whole idea of laddering of investments and those kinds of things. But taking it into account, but also, the bigger thing then is to have a well-diversified program of assets, so that you are not assuming that interest rates are going to go up or down, that inflation is going to skyrocket or remain the same, but trying to take into account all the possibilities and building something that's diversified enough to weather all the conditions, if you will.
So if there's somebody listening to us right now who has been suitably impressed by the breadth and scope of your knowledge here today, and says, I'd like to talk some more to that guy. They can't talk to you, can they? I mean, you're the president. Who do they call, and what's the number?
Well, they can call, to start with, 314-996-1450 or 1-800-996-1450. And it'll go to our receptionist, and she will put them in touch with a person they could talk to. If it needs to be me, I'm perfectly willing to help them get in the right direction, and we could have them sit down with one of our tremendous gift planning counselors or trust administrators and get some more information. And again, we are not financial planners, but we do financial planning in the context of gift planning, and we have a very solid knowledge base about all these things to help people at least begin to navigate these waters a little better.
Is this a good week or a bad week to call? Should we wait till after the first of the year? Would that be better, or can we call now?
There's a skeleton crew for us at the foundation, but there are people who will pick up the phone even today, and we are out of the office Thursday and Friday, but okay. Then we're back in full gear next week.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy the conversation.
Yeah. Likewise, Jeff.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
I'm praying that you get at least two more days without any more snow.
There you go.
After that, I can't help you.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All righty. That's President Tom Reese, president of the LCMS Foundation, on our Ask the Pastor program. We continue in Hosea tomorrow. Hope you can join us then.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.